Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films The Sixth, Bad Faith, and Robot Dreams.
I'd like to talk about a couple of political movies today, and then to lighten the atmosphere, we'll talk about a new animated film. So a mixed bag here. First movie I'd like to talk about, and this is streaming, by the way, is a movie called The Sixth, and it was directed by Andrea Nix Fine and Sean Fine, and it is all about January 6th of 2021, the riot at the United States Capitol in Washington, D.C. So that is the subject of the film, and the movie's most distinguishing feature is a whole lot of really vivid footage, a whole lot of camera footage of different kinds, body cams worn by police officers, obviously cameras that are set up in the Capitol building, just all over the place, that captured so much of this. And what we have here is a movie that consists to some extent of that footage, and that is by all means the movie's finest calling card, interspersed with interviews with a few people who recur throughout the film. So one of them is Robert Conti, who is the chief of the Metropolitan Police in Washington, D.C. Another is a guy named Mel D. Cole, who is a photographer. He's an African-American photographer, and that's what he specializes in. And he was there documenting this as it happened. So we see a whole lot of still photographs that he took. Another, I won't mention all the people who appear in interviews, but another figure who appears a great deal in the film is Jamie Raskin, who is a member of the House of Representatives. He is from Maryland, the state where I currently reside, and I think he is a real hero of today's government. And he appears in it quite a lot, and he was caught up in it. And I just want to spend one moment here for people who might not know this story about what an incredible hero Jamie Raskin was during this whole episode, partly for reasons completely personal to him. On the last day of the year, just a few days earlier, Jamie Raskin's son, who had had great problems with depression, committed suicide. That's December 31st. The funeral for Jamie Raskin's son was held on January 5. Then on January 6th, the riot takes place. And Jamie Raskin is not sitting at home nursing his grief, which of course is profound. I can't imagine how deep it must have been. He comes to D.C., he comes with two or three relatives, and he is there during this whole event doing his very best to try to calm things and, well, to just do his job as a member of the United States government. So I think he is a real hero. And certainly, he appears a good deal in this documentary. Also, near the end, we see Michael Fanone, who was a police officer, and we see his image being caught in the riot and being evidently in danger of his life being taken, and he appears near the end talking about the experience as well. So that is what The Sixth is. I don't think The Sixth is quite as excellent a documentary as I wish it were. One reason is because it really does focus too much on the human element, and that may sound like an odd thing to say, but at the beginning there are these interview segments before we get to the real footage, which are people saying things that I found very predictable and somewhat sentimental and that sort of stuff. And then at the end of the movie we have a return of that. However, the bulk of the movie, especially when we see that astonishing footage from the January 6th riot, is really, really powerful stuff. One more flaw in the documentary is that it doesn't analyze anything. There were different groups, just for one example, the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. There were different groups who played different roles in the insurrection. And we don't get any sense of who did what. At one point near the beginning, somebody described seeing this group marching in formation down the street, but then that's it. We never find out why the group came there, how the group got organized, what role the group group played in the overall events of the day. Again, there's no analysis. There's no getting into the detail of this. What there is, however, is, I'll say it again, all of that amazing footage. And if you see this on any kind of a screen that you are close to, it is really vivid. It really pops right out at you. And I think it's really worth remembering. I always remember one member of Congress who said later on, attempting to whitewash the whole thing, that the people in who went into the Capitol, they were orderly. They were just like tourists looking around. Well, that was preposterous when it was said. But you look at this footage and you think about a statement like that and you see how willing people are when they have some skin in the game to twist the truth in the most grotesque and obviously idiotically false ways. Anyway, The Sixth is not a great documentary, but it's a very good document of that day, January 6th, the riot in the Capitol, and I recommend it, even though, again, it's not a great documentary. It's certainly a worthwhile documentary. The next movie I'd like to talk about is called Bad Faith, and it was made by Stephen Ujlaki and Christopher Jacob Jones, and this deals with another phenomenon in today's political world, which is Christian nationalism, so-called. So what the movie does is it talks about the origins and the growth of Christian nationalism in its various forms. Now, Christian nationalism, of course, is a movement which believes that the United States is, certainly should be, recognized as a Christian nation where Christians have priority over other people and where the government and the laws and the rules are all based on Christian principles. Now, of course, America includes a lot of people who are not Christians, so that's a dubious proposition, in my opinion. But what this movie does is to get into the sort of nitty-gritty, if I can use a very trite phrase, as to how all of this emerged and the history of it and how it is functioning today. And so we see people treated at various points. There is, for example, the moral majority, which started back in 1980, which was led by the preacher Jerry Falwell. Paul Weyrich, who was a conservative activist who started the Council for National Policy. And they did a lot to try to bring together Christian beliefs and right-wing politics. And we see how these people interacted with each other, how somebody like Weyrich interacted with people like Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson, and how this all gathered momentum and kept on snowballing until it reached the levels that it seems to have today, and it may be still growing. Some people now call the GOP, rather than the grand old party, God's own party. And, of course, a lot of this stuff also dates back to the years of Reagan, who was elected with a great deal, Ronald Reagan, with a great deal of evangelical help. Fascinating things emerge along the way. For example, the writer of a book that deals with American religion, and particularly with this this phenomenon of Christian nationalism, and is where the title of this movie, Bad Faith, came from, makes a really interesting point that a lot of people feel that the Christian right first gained its big mushrooming momentum in 1973 when Roe versus Wade was enacted, which legalized abortion much more than it had ever been legalized on a national level before. But in fact, the case is really quite different. Jerry Falwell, one of the big leaders of the Christian right back in the 80s, did not deliver his first sermon against abortion until the late 70s. So abortion had been legalized by Roe versus Wade in 1973, and it wasn't until about 5 years later that Jerry Falwell gave his first sermon against abortion. So if that's the case, then what was it that first mobilized the Christian right? Well, according to this movie, it was the ruling on school desegregation in 1971 that took away tax-exempt status from institutions, charitable institutions, educational institutions, and so forth, that engage in racial discrimination. That's what it was. So it turns out that this was much less about abortion and much more about trying to keep tax breaks and much more about being against desegregation and for various kinds of segregation. So all of this kind of stuff comes out in the movie. And of course, when it's at its most apocalyptic, speaking using that word in more than one sense, the movie really does get to the dreams of theocracy that a whole lot of Christian nationalists have. They would like the United States to be run by and for Christians. And that is not what, in my opinion, a pluralistic nation really means to do. Christian values are hugely important. So are the values of many other religions. So are humanist values that are not religious at all. And, well, that's my philosophy. And this movie really gets into all of this. It also, by the way, gets into one of the craziest theories about Donald Trump, who, of course, is very much involved in all of this stuff. The idea that he is like the biblical King Cyrus, that is himself maybe not religious, not a member of our religion, but somebody who is going to help the people who are in our religion. So he may be, to use a phrase from another, a totally other branch of politics, he may be a kind of useful idiot for the evangelicals who are really running the show. In any case, that's just another thing that emerges in this movie along the way, that whole idea that Donald Trump is thousands of years later a King Cyrus come to save Christianity and ensure that we have a Christian nation. In any case, all of these things are dealt with. I have to say again that I don't think Bad Faith is a great movie. It's not a great documentary. It's very conventional, but it has a lot of very interesting people in it, and it covers all these things in a reasonably cogent way, and it's really well worth seeing by anybody, whatever side of the political spectrum anybody is on. It's worth seeing if you want to understand some of the forces behind what's going on in today's very active politics, especially with another election coming up. And now, as promised, an animation, a very sweet little modest movie that's just sort of sweet and nice. I didn't find it all that compelling, but I have to say the reviews for this movie, Robot Dreams, have been absolutely ecstatic. Everybody loves it. Most people seem to love it more than I do. I like it, but most people seem to love it. So, hey. Bear it in mind if you want to see a very sweet animation, and it certainly is a perfectly suitable movie for the whole family. So, the main character, and by the way, this movie takes place in New York City back in the 1980s, and all of the population is animals. We have dogs and cats and pigs and birds and things like that. Isn't that nice? So that's what this animation shows us. And it's a very modestly made animation. It's very 2D, has a very hand-drawn look. So it's very old-fashioned and very nice in that way. And our main character is a dog whose name is Dog. And he's lonely. He lives in the East Village. He lives alone. He does things alone. He's just a guy who doesn't have anybody else in his life. And then he sees a TV commercial for a robot that you can buy and build at home. And oh my gosh, this is what he needs, a companion. So he buys the kit, builds the robot, and it works. And the next thing you know, they're having a lot of fun. They're strolling down Fifth Avenue. They're going to Central Park. They're roller skating. They're going to Coney Island. They're having a nice, nice time. But they go to the beach at Coney Island, and something goes wrong. Robot gets in the water and gets rusty so that he can't move anymore. So there he is. He's all short-circuited, and he is paralyzed, and he is lying on the beach. And Dog comes back the next day trying to help fix him. I mean, he's the one who assembled this robot in the first place. So he's going to fix him, but he can't do it. He can't make it work. The beach is closed for the season. Dog might be able to repair a robot, but he can't get in, and it's going to be months and months before he can get in. So poor Robot is lying there on the beach, getting rusty, and Dog goes on with his life as well as he can. When Robot is asleep on the beach, he dreams of getting back together with Dog one way or another. In the meanwhile, Dog starts to imagine himself, or maybe it's really happening, with a cool duck he meets, a female duck. So there's another companion, and maybe he's not going to need Robot after all. So what is going to happen here? However, we know that these two are going to remain loyal to each other. And so the movie becomes, how are they going to get together? When are they going to get together again? And how is this story going to be resolved? Now, I said before that I like Robot Dreams, and I do. I like it a lot, but I don't love it. I don't think that the animation or the story are just interesting enough to really hold an adult's attention for the length of a feature-length film. It's all very sweet and nice, but it's also modest and laid back and quiet and small. That I just would have liked more inventiveness, more to be going on in this movie. In the meanwhile, I don't think it's exciting enough in its action for younger kids. I think they'll get impatient. So that's me. Maybe I'm just being too cynical about the whole thing. Again, I liked Robot Dreams. I didn't love it. It was directed by Pablo Berger, who also wrote it. It's based on a graphic novel. And it's just nice to see a movie like this. I'll go on the positive side again here. A nice limited animation, a small animation, a beautifully done animation with lovely performances. I should mention that there is almost no dialogue in the film, but the cartoon figures themselves become characters who we can really identify with and follow. So I wish the movie were more inventive in its style. I wish the movie were more exciting in its events. Then maybe it would captivate kids more. But look, almost everybody seems to really love this movie, and who am I to say it's not lovable? So I guess I can recommend Robot Dreams on that level. If you want to see a nice little quiet, tender movie at this time of the year, and that's not a bad idea, then Robot Dreams might be the movie for you. So that is my somewhat political, somewhat robotic story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films The Sixth, Bad Faith, and Robot Dreams.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.